Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Before we get started today, just a quick heads up. This episode was put together using some AI tools.
Yeah.
So there is like a very slight chance that something might not be 100% accurate. You know, we're still learning, but we hope you'll find some interesting things in here anyway. And be sure to check out the show notes for a link back to the original research if you want to dive in a little bit deeper on anything that we talk about today.
Yeah, that's a great point. The original research we'll be exploring today is by Greg A. Spolek from Portland State University. So huge thanks to him for this work. It's given us some pretty incredible insights into the physics of fly fishing.
Yeah, speaking of insights, today's deep dive is all about the physics of fly fishing.
Yeah.
And specifically how a fly actually gets propelled through the air. I mean, have you ever actually stopped to think about that? Like these flies are tiny. They've got so much air resistance. How do they go anywhere?
Yeah. You really wouldn't think a little feather and some thread could travel that far.
Right. So where does the magic happen?
Well, it's all about the fly line. You see, it's not just a simple string. It's actually a weighted projectile. And the weight is standardized too. So the first 30 feet has to weigh exactly 185 grains, which is about 12 grams, to give you a visual that's about the weight of two nickels.
Two nickels. That's launching a fly across a river. Okay, you got my attention.
Yeah, it's all physics. Let's think about the most common cast, the overhead cast. You know the line goes back, then forward. And as it travels, it forms this loop. And that loop is key because it acts like a mini slingshot transferring energy down the line.
So it's not just the weight, it's the motion of the line itself. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really interesting. As the line unrolls, it gets lighter and lighter, right? But because of this principle of conservation of energy, the total energy in the system has to stay the same. So what happens? The fly actually accelerates horizontally during the cast.
Like seriously, it speeds up. I would have thought it would like just slow down because of the air resistance.
I know, right? But less line means the fly itself can move faster. It's like a snowball rolling down a hill, getting smaller, but picking up speed as it goes.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
Okay, but you can't ignore air resistance completely, can you? It has to play some role.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Air resistance or drag is a huge factor in how the fly travels. And this is where the shape of the fly line, what we call the taper, comes into play. Different tapers mean different fly behaviors.
Okay, let's unpack this whole taper thing. What kind of tapers are we talking about?
Well, there are a few main types. The most basic is a level line, which has a uniform diameter all the way through. Then you have a long taper where the diameter increases consistently along the length. And of course, there's the double taper, which is the most popular. It has a level middle section with tapered ends. Each of these creates a unique velocity profile for the fly, changing how it accelerates and decelerates during the cast.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, the way my fly line is shaped can actually make my fly speed up or slow down at different points in the cast?
Exactly, and that's just the beginning. There's even a theoretical experimental taper designed for ultimate consistency.
Wait, a taper designed for consistency? Okay, now I have to know more about that.
So this experimental taper is designed to produce constant velocity at the end of your cast. Think of it like cruise control for your fly line. In theory, it could mean more accurate and predictable casts, regardless of tiny imperfections in your technique.
That sounds incredible. But wouldn't that take away some of the like feel and the artistry of fly fishing? I mean, part of the fun is learning to adapt to the nuances of different lines.
That's a valid point. You know, some fly fishers might find it too predictable, but for those who really value consistency, it could be a game changer.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, so we've got these different tapers affecting velocity, but how does that actually like play out on the water? Let's start with the level line.
Okay, so with a level line, the fly will actually decelerate for most of the cast. That long, uniform line creates a lot of drag. You'll only get a little boost of acceleration right at the very end.
So not the most efficient for distance casting, I'm guessing.
Not exactly. Now the long taper is all about acceleration. The fly speeds up for almost the entire cast and then brakes pretty hard right at the end. It's like a sprinter going all out and then suddenly hitting a wall.
I can see how that would be tricky to control.
Precisely. Even slight variations in your casting technique can lead to big differences in where the fly lands. That's partly why that experimental taper is so intriguing. By maintaining constant velocity at the end, it could theoretically smooth out those inconsistencies.
Interesting. What about the double taper? You said that's the most popular for a reason, right?
Absolutely. It's all about that unique velocity profile. It starts by decelerating. Then, bam, the tapered section kicks in and you get this burst of acceleration, but then decelerates again just as quickly before reaching its final velocity.
So the roller coaster ride for the fly.
Exactly. And that little acceleration peak near the end of the cast, gives it a characteristic kick. It helps propel the fly past the end of the line and turn over the leader, which is that thin, nearly invisible line connecting your fly line to the fly itself. Fly fishers love that feeling.
Okay, so each taper has its own personality, its own strengths and weaknesses. But you mentioned earlier that loop control is also super important, right? What's the deal with that?
Loop control is crucial. The size of the loop you form during the cast directly impacts how much energy you lose to air resistance. The bigger the loop, the more drag you're fighting against.
So it's like trying to swim with a giant parachute behind you.
That's a great way to put it. That's why good casting instructors are always emphasizing tight loops. It's not just about aesthetics, it's about physics. A smaller loop means less drag, which means you can achieve the same cast with less effort.
That makes a lot of sense. But I imagine there's a limit to how small you can make that loop, right? I mean, the line can only bend so much.
Yeah. You're right. There are physical limitations. The line itself has some inherent stiffness, and your rod tip will always have a bit of inertial overshoot, making a perfectly tight loop impossible. But the closer you can get, the more efficient your casts will be.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot. This is fascinating. Fly fishing isn't just about art and intuition. It's this delicate dance of physics.
Exactly. And we've only just scratched the surface. You know, we've focused on one specific type of cast. But there's a whole world of fly fishing physics to explore. Think about different casting styles, wind conditions, even the weight and shape of the fly itself. Each variable adds another layer of complexity to the equation.
Okay, so we've learned that the fly line is the engine of the cast, that the fly actually accelerates, and that the shape of the line and the size of our loop have a huge impact on efficiency. But what does this all mean for someone who wants to improve their casting?
Well, first and foremost, it highlights the importance of understanding your equipment. Knowing how different tapers behave can help you choose the right line for your casting style and the conditions you're fishing in.
Yeah, and don't forget about that loop control.
Right, practicing your casting technique to achieve those tight, efficient loops can make a world of difference in your distance and accuracy. It's not always easy, but like we've been saying, physics is on your side.
So basically, knowledge is power when it comes to fly fishing. The more you understand the physics behind it, the better you'll be able to make those perfect casts.
Exactly. And that brings us to a really interesting thought. We've talked about these existing tapers, but what if we could design our own? Imagine the possibilities.
Whoa, you're blowing my mind here. What kind of crazy tapers are you imagining?
Well, think about it. What if you had a taper that compensated for wind conditions? Or one specifically designed for casting heavy nymphs versus delicate dry flies?
That's incredible. It's like a whole new frontier of fly fishing technology just waiting to be explored.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll see some revolutionary new fly lines hit the market someday, all thanks to a better understanding of the physics involved.
Wouldn't that be amazing? So for all you fly fishing enthusiasts out there, I encourage you to really think about the science behind your next cast. It might just change the way you approach the sport.
And if you want to learn more about the fascinating research that sparked this whole conversation, be sure to check out the show notes for a link to the original source material.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep casting those lines.